It's taken me a little while to get back to this recording again. I have had a lot of illness this past year and haven't really been doing much of anything, but they finally diagnosed my problem, and I have a disease that they at least can give me medication for and perhaps will help me to get to feeling better. So I'll pick up where we got into Lovelock after we crossed Donner Pass. As I say, it was a really bad snowstorm. We thought we were the last car through, but when we got up in the morning at the hotel, there was another one of the guys who had been stationed there at Stockton with me, Brownie, and he was and his family had come over the pass, and they were actually the last car through. And he got about halfway across and had a blowout, and a little while later he had another blowout, because in those days you couldn't buy tires. They were rationed during the war years, and his tires were old. And there they were. He was stranded with his wife and children in this snowstorm, and no other cars apparently going to be coming over the mountain. But one car came in from a side road, came past him, and it was big enough. He stopped and picked up the whole family and brought them into Lovelock. So they were there at the hotel also. When we got up that morning, he was waiting for me in the lobby because he saw my car out in front and knew that we were there. So we went back and went around the town first and scrounged and talked our way into some of the places and talked him into selling us a couple of tires, and we went back out and put him on his car and got him going and brought the car into town, and that he could go on home with his family. I need to back up just a little and make one correction on this, however. When I started our journey across the mountain, I had said that we had gotten a furlough take a trip home. This wasn't a furlough at that time. That was I was being transferred to another base. The school had ended at Stockton, and I was being transferred to go to the next phase of pilot training at Hobbs, New Mexico. And so they had allowed us what they called a delay en route. Instead of me having to travel with the rest of the guys going to that base, they allowed me to take my own car and take my wife wherever I wanted, which I was going to take her home to Ogden and leave her there with her parents while I went on down to Hobbs. The furlough that we did have out of Stockton had occurred earlier in the spring, and we did have a furlough where we went home to visit for a week. And it was kind of an interesting way that we went on that trip. I told my brother, who was going, Carlisle was going to the University of Utah in Salt Lake, and in either conversation or in the mail, I had told him that we'd be coming home for a furlough. And he wrote back and said that one of the very closest friends at the school, his parents, he was Japanese, and during the war years, even though the Japanese who had been living in the United States for a long time, many of them born and raised in the United States, they still, when the war occurred, they rounded up all those people and made them go into camps instead of letting them just live their normal lives. So his parents, who were living in Oakland, had to go to a camp, and they had locked up their house, and they put their car in the garage and blocked it up on blocks to save the tires going bad. And they said, if I wanted to go and fix the car up, get the tires and get the engine running and change the oil and everything, that I could drive it to Ogden from Oakland And the son who was there at the University of Utah, then that would give him a car. So that's what I did. Whenever I had spare time off the base, which wasn't very much, but I would run over to Oakland, which is about an hour or so from Stockton, and I would work on this car and get it ready. And it was a 1937 or 39, I'm not sure of the year, and it was a big Buick sedan, very nice, beautiful car. And I got it running, got it, and it was in excellent shape. So when Jeannie and I had that furlough in the spring, we drove to Ogden in that Buick and went home for the visit. And then when we went back to the Stockton on the bus. And then it was after that that I bought the little Dodge Coupe, and that's what we had when we were being transferred then to New Mexico. And so this trip that I was speaking of, coming across Donner Pass in July, was actually a transfer trip. And it wasn't very eventful. After we got out of Lovelock, we were then in the northern Nevada desert, and we just went right across there and into Salt Lake and Ogden. And Jeannie then stayed with her folks, and I went on, took a bus and went to Hobbs, New Mexico, where I was in some advanced flight training. And while I was at Hobbs, I ran across a young man who had been our friend at when we were in school, and at Weaver College. Primarily, he was a very good friend of my brother's. His name was Claire Whiteley, and Claire had finished his flight training and was in as a pilot, helping Ben to train other pilots, and he was stationed there at Hobbs. And we ran into each other and renewed the acquaintance. And one day he said that in one of his training missions, he was going to fly a plane to Salt Lake City, and if I wanted to come along, if I could arrange it, why, I'd be glad to. And the only way we could figure out that I could arrange to do it was if I went and signed up as a flight engineer, and you had to take a special exam for that, and then if you qualified, why, you were signed on as a flight engineer. Well, I went and talked to my CO and asked him if I could do that, and he says yes, that I could work that in between the school right then. So I went and took the test and passed and got signed as a flight engineer and put my name on the call board, but no one else knew I was available, so no one else bothered to call me. But Claire knew I was available, so when he went to go on that training mission, then he called, and I would sign on to his plane as a flight engineer. And we flew to Salt Lake and were there for 3 days, and I got to go up to Ogden and see Jeannie. And on the way going in, I had told Claire that we were having some trouble with the number two engine. We were flying a B-17, which is a four-engine plane, and I told him we were having a little problem with that number two engine. That's what a flight engineer does, is make sure that everything's functioning properly in the aircraft. And I suggested that we stop there at Salt Lake longer and have them either repair or change that engine. But he didn't think it was bad enough, so he said that we can go, because even if it goes out, we can fly this airplane on three engines, there's no problem. So I said fine. So we after the 3 days, well, we scheduled to head back to Hobbs, New Mexico. We got about, not too far out, because we were just barely over the edge of Arizona. And another engine went out, and so we knew that this one had a bad oil situation. So rather than take a chance on it being any more dangerous, why we landed at Winslow, Arizona, which was actually a naval air base, and took the plane in there for them to repair it, and then we stayed there a day while they sent another plane up from Hobbs and picked us up and flew us on down to Hobbs. And I kidded Claire all the time after. I said, if you'd have listened to me, we could have stayed in Salt Lake City and visited with our wives a little longer before we had to go back down there. But that was one of the things that happened. And now back like I say, I left Jeannie there in Ogden, and this was July, and first week in July, and Michael was born first week in August. And at Brigham City, there was a Bushnell military hospital, which is, of course, only about 15, 20 miles from where Jeannie was living there with her parents. Jeannie's older sister, Jessie, happened to be there also because her husband was away in the service. And so she, being a nurse, she was a lot of help to Jeannie. And Jeannie went to the Bushnell Hospital in Brigham City, and that's where Michael was born. And I was in Hobbs, and when we heard of the fact that it was time for him to be born, why, I was real excited about it, and they sent me a telegram and told me that we had a baby boy. I had a son, and that was real exciting. And so I went to my commanding officer, a major, and asked him if I could get an emergency furlough and go home to be there with Jeannie at the time of having the baby. And he said, no, you were there for the laying of the keel, but you can't be there for the launching of the ship. So they wouldn't let me go on emergency furlough. But about a couple of weeks or so after Michael was born, Jeannie got quite ill. And she had a breast abscess, and it was really painful, and she couldn't really do much or function much. And it was very difficult for her mother, where Jeannie was staying, was with her mother, and it was difficult for her to take care of both Jeannie and the baby. As I say, the hospital she had gone to was a military hospital, and her doctor was a colonel. And so he asked where her husband was, and she told him, and he says, well, we ought to get him here to help out. So they had done all this from their end, and I didn't know anything about it, but one day someone came looking for me there in the base and said, you got to report to your commanding officer. And so I went in and reported, and he says, they've sent for you. Your wife is quite ill, and they need you, so you have an emergency furlough that you can go on for 2 weeks and go be with her and help out. So I went over and packed my bags. So ever since the baby had been born, I had been telling all the guys at the base that one of these days I was just going to go ahead and take off and go and see my new son. I wasn't going to mess around any longer. And so I did it kind of jokingly, but they weren't sure whether I was serious or not. And I left that afternoon right from work, and didn't have a chance to tell the other guys in the barracks that I was going. I just went in, packed up my things, and went out on, took my furlough that they had issued me and papers, and went out, and I went and checked. There was no train at Hobbs, New Mexico. The nearest train was like 80 miles away, but so I was going to take a bus to get home to Ogden, and I went out and checked on when the bus was going, and there wasn't one leaving for about 6 hours. So I thought, well, I'll go see what I can do. So I just took my bag and went on the road and hitched a ride and started for Ogden, and I was 6 hours ahead of the bus, so I thought, and I followed the same route, so I thought, any time if I get stranded, I'll just wait for the bus to come along, and then I'll pick up the bus and go on. But I made it hitchhiking. I hitchhiked all the way to Ogden, and I got into Ogden about 11 hours sooner than I would have if I had waited and taken the bus, so I made pretty good time. I got in there very early in the morning, about 6 o'clock, and went and knocked on the door, and Grandma came to the door, and she was had the little baby in her arms because he was crying, and so that was the first that I got to see my son, and he was squalling and really unhappy and red-faced, and I said, he's kind of a funny-looking little guy, and Grandma Barrett didn't think I was very good. She got pretty mad at me because I said my little son looked funny, but that was the first impression of him, and he, of course, turned out to be a real beautiful young man and very handsome as he grew older, and so he overcame that redness the first time I saw him. I stayed the 2 weeks while that I had the furlough, and Jeannie still was quite ill, and at the end of the 2 weeks, the colonel says, well, you better stay a little longer. And so he put in, and he had the influence to do it. I would never have been able to, in the service like that, but he put in and and got me an extension of 2 more weeks. So I was, but that meant 4 weeks I had been there in Ogden with Jeannie. And now she began to feel better. She began to regain her health, and the baby was doing well, and things were working out real good for her there at home. And so I got ready to leave again, and went in and thanked the colonel for having arranged the furlough. And he said, well, you guys have been through a pretty tough time, and so maybe you need a few days together. So he called and got it extended 1 more week, just even though everything was okay with Jeannie, so that we could have a week together when it wasn't all just stress and strain from her being so sick and the pressures of trying to take care of both her and the baby. And so we had about a week together, which was real great, and then I left to go back. Well, by now it's in the latter part of September, when I left Hobbs to go on the furlough, it was very hot in summer, and all I took with me were just a light summer uniform. And when I started to go back down there, well, it was almost into October, and the weather started changing, so it began to get pretty cool. I did the same thing going back. I thought, well, I'll just go ahead of the bus time and hitchhike down and see if I can make it. And I hitched a ride and got down into Arizona, got into Flagstaff. Well, Flagstaff is high. Flagstaff is, I don't know, 5 or 6,000 feet high, and they have pretty heavy winters, and it happened to be that a snowstorm had come in there. And so when I got to Flagstaff, I got there about midnight, and it was cold and snowy and just really miserable. And during the war years, they had USOs, United Service Organizations, that were places where the military could go, and they would hold socials and they'd hold meals and they'd hold entertainment, but also they did have a few bunks or couches that you could sleep on if you needed in time, a time break. So I went to the USO there in Flagstaff and went in, and it was warm, and I laid down and slept for a couple hours, and then about 2 o'clock I got up and went back on, and I had put on everything I had with me. I didn't have anything left in my little bag that I carried, because I was wearing all my shirts and all my pants and the only light jacket I had, and I had everything on. But I went back out and got on the highway and started to hitch a ride out of Flagstaff, and a guy came along and offered me a ride, and he was a naval officer, and he was being transferred to a base in Texas, he said, do you mind driving? And I said, no, I don't mind driving. And he said, well, I haven't had any sleep for 24 hours. So he said, if you'd take over and drive for me for a while. And we figured out where he was heading, where I was heading. He was going pretty close to Hobbs, but not exactly. But It was only about 50 miles out of the way to cut down from the highway and on a side road to take into Hobbs. So he says, just go on right down there if you want to. So I drove all the way from Flagstaff to Hobbs, New Mexico. And when we got to the where I got out, well, I woke him up and said, told him where we were and the road to take to get back onto the main road to go on across to Texas. I went in the base, and again, I had beat the bus by quite a few hours and was there way ahead of it, and went on in and checked in to the base. And when I got in there, it was interesting. The guys from the barracks weren't sure whether I went AWOL or not, so they had covered for me the whole 5 weeks that I was gone. They made up my bunk every day and reported me in, and they had done everything to keep me from getting picked up for being AWOL, which was absent without leave from the service, which was a criminal offense. They all laughed about it when they found out that I was actually on a furlough and that I was gone legally, and there wasn't really no problem from it. And came back went back into school. And I'd only been back into school just a few weeks, and the war was pretty well over with. That had ended the conflict in Europe and the conflict in Japan. They had signed peace treaties, and it had come to a close. And so they called all of us in that were in that particular unit, and they said, well, we'll have interviews with each one of you. And so when I went in for my interview, they said that I was over the age of the actual graduating class qualifications in pilot training. They had let me in it because I qualified, but the majority of the guys in that class were about 2 years younger than I was. And so my graduating time, I would actually be over the age of their time limit when I graduated. So they said if I wanted to continue, I could go ahead and finish and get my wings and get my commission. But if I did that, then I would have to sign up for the Army of Occupation and sign up for 2 years of Army of Occupation and go wherever they sent me. It could have been into the anywhere in the world that they had occupation troops that I would then be stationed. And the second choice was that I could go back into the regular Air Force at the rank of sergeant and just take my chances and be in the service, or the third choice was that I could take a discharge and be released from the service, but I would be subject to being called back in should I be needed for anything. So it'd be like redrafting back into the service. Well, I had a brand new baby boy at home, just born in August, and this was now the last part of October, and it wasn't a difficult choice. They said I had 3 days to make up my mind, and I said, I only need 3 minutes. And I said, where do I sign? I take a discharge and go home. I don't feel that I was cut out for military service. I see nothing wrong with military service, but it just was not what I wanted to do as a career. It was not something that I had any desires to stay in and be involved in the service as a career type of situation, or even to stay a few more years in it. So they soon then closed down the school, and they were beginning to, I guess those who signed on to go on and finish up and get their degree and get their wings, they probably stayed in, but I was changed, and then I was sent over to Roswell, New Mexico, which was a base not too far from Hobbs, a little farther north, and we went into a mustering out situation there. We were there for about 2 weeks, and everything, you know, they got every checked all the records and checked all your supplies and issued you the certain amount of clothing that you'd be issued to get you home. And then I was discharged and got an honorable discharge out of the service in November of 1945, I think it was, and went on home and got home in time for Christmas that year. And then I went back out to the base at Hill Air Force Base, because I considered two or three other things. Dad wanted me to consider going to work for an insurance company in the field that he'd been in, and I considered that and investigated it quite thoroughly, and there were a lot of advantages to it, and I was very tempted. And then Jeannie's father was a railway mail clerk, and that was a pretty solid, steady job, and he also got me an interview with the people there, and I went down and talked to them about going to work in that area. And in the meantime, when you went in the service, you were told that when you got out of the service, you were guaranteed your job back with the civil service appointment that I had at Hill. So I went back out there and thought, well, I'll go back to work there until I decide whether I want what else I might want to do. And I went back to Hill, and it was very boring, to be very honest, when I went back out there, because now the war had wound down and they were winding the base down. There wasn't very, very little work. You'd go in the morning and they'd give you about 30 minutes worth of work and tell you that had to last you all day long because there wasn't that much to do. We were dumping stuff. One day I know we loaded a big truck, great big semi-truck, with all the supplies out of the supply rooms. All the tools, the hand tools, the equipment, even down to coils of rope and all types of things. And we put them all in this big truck. And I asked the guy in charge, I said, what are they going to do with all this? And he says, well, we take it out, and they've dug a big hole out here in the field, and we're just going to bury it all. I said, what on earth they do that for? And he said, well, if they don't get rid of all this stuff, then when it comes time for the new budget and they ask for more money for the base, they won't give them more money because they'll say, well, you've already got all this equipment. But if they get rid of all the equipment and then they go and turn in the budget and say, well, we have to have the equipment because we don't have any equipment, they don't particularly ask what happened to the equipment. They just assume that the equipment got used or worn out or whatever. And so then their budget, they can budget in and buy all new equipment. And I thought, boy, what a waste of tax dollars. And I saw that type of thing happen, and I got so discouraged being out there. I just could hardly face going to work each day because of that type of situation. So then I considered going back to school, and I had only had the two semesters of college, so I thought, well, maybe if I went back to school and I got smart and learned something that I would be able to do better and in earning a living. And so I went into Salt Lake and decided maybe I'd try to go to the University of Utah, and went into Salt Lake and snooped around. And when I was another job that I don't think I mentioned, but when I was that year, I was the first year I was out of high school, Phil and Maud, my sister and her husband, owned a motel there in Ogden, and they had called me a few times and had me go down and work a night shift on the desk at the motel when they needed a night clerk. And I could do that because it didn't interfere with my day job. And so I had some experience with the motel business. And so I went into Salt Lake and went around, and I found a little hotel that had I've forgotten now, but 30 or 40 rooms with just a small hotel and a little independent and very nice little hotel. And I went and applied for a job with them. Well, after two or three interviews and talking to them, I had an arrangement worked out where I would go in and be a manager of the hotel, and they would hire a night man, so I didn't have to be on shift all night, but I would have to be overall taking care of the place. But they did allow me that I could have 6 hours off during the day, and there was another day man that would come in. I could have 6 hours off during the day to go to school. So, and we would have our place to live at the place, plus they would pay me a little something beside, it wasn't very much, on top of the living quarters. I think it was only $200 a month or something that they would pay me, but that would at least buy groceries, and we would have a place to live, and I would have the 6 hours a day to go to school. And the University of Utah was close, fairly close to where the hotel was, so I could take a bus back and forth, although we did have a little car. And I thought that might work out, and I had anticipated getting actually just basic.